Let's now have a look at how autoimmunity can affect the joints. And there are various forms of arthritis or inflammation of the joints. And the most common that people get is osteoarthritis, which is a more of a wear and tear condition, although we now know there are some immunological elements in some osteoarthritis, OA, but it's usually quite distinct from the more inflammatory versions we're going to talk about in this article, and similar to gout, which is caused by a build-up of uric acid in the joints. Again, it's a metabolic problem rather than an immunological one. So there are three forms that we identify as particularly as of autoimmune origin: rheumatoid arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, or psoriatic arthritis. In each of these, the joints are attacked by the body's immune defences, as we find in autoimmunity. They do have some distinct features, however. So let's start with rheumatoid arthritis, or RA. Bit of a mystery about where this came from. It was first described properly in about 1800 in Europe, and the thought was that it may have arisen from the Americas. There is archaeological evidence that it was in America before then, and the thought was that it came over when the Europeans went over to the continent and came back. Now I think the idea is that that possibly wasn't exactly the case, that it was present in European populations before, but lives were on the whole shorter, and some of the factors that are likely to be associated with rheumatoid arthritis, like the Industrial Revolution, hadn't happened at that point, and smoke particularly and pollution as definitely precipitating factors. So it may have been around before that. Interesting, but probably not entirely relevant sidetrack here. So the name rheumatoid arthritis came from an old Greek word, rheum, which was a toxic fluid or humour in the body, and it was particularly seen as a discharge from the eyes. And the old idea was that there's somehow this toxic secretion somehow affected the joints, and we might laugh now and say that you know, that's all medieval nonsense. However, it's interesting to note that we now know that immune problems in the airways and the upper passages can precede RA by many years. And there was an old link between rheumatoid arthritis and, for example, lung disease, which, you know, does remind us of what we've seen earlier when we talked about autoimmunity, about the importance of looking for earlier problems, particularly infective problems, because that's where the immune disease might have arisen. So we always we look back whenever we're dealing with a thing like this to look for any clue, and the airways are one place to go hunting. Another factor that we now know is increasingly involved with rheumatoid arthritis is viruses, and particularly the Epstein-Barr virus associated with glandular fever and so on has been found to be a potent provocateur of rheumatoid arthritis, and some of the organisms in the mouth, particularly associated with gum disease, have been increasingly associated with rheumatoid arthritis, and some of the evidence shows that if gum disease is adequately treated, this can itself improve rheumatoid arthritis. And there's every reason for anyone who's got rheumatoid arthritis to really have close attention to their gum health, and as the article says, brush your teeth particularly, and especially after eating sugar, because another factor in rheumatoid arthritis does seem to be sugar. It was one of the theories about why rheumatoid arthritis came after the colonization of the Americas, because of course it also meant bringing back sugar, which was grown industrially over there. And for the first time, people in the 19th century were exposed to levels of sugar they never had before. And it may be that sugar was one of the factors in the incidence of rheumatoid arthritis. So for two reasons at least, brush your teeth. Other things that were increasingly identified in relation to rheumatoid arthritis is the penetration of trouble through the gut wall. And indeed, there's even a radical idea that actual bacteria can penetrate through the gut wall and lodge in the target tissues and be a focus for immunological attack there. All the more reason to come back again, as we've done before, to looking at the gut wall, see if there's any hint of leaky gut there that we could work on. And that, of course, brings us right back again to the health of the microbiome and dysbiosis, and how things like diet and other things we can do can improve the quality of the gut wall. And there's a useful diagram to illustrate the connection between gut wall and rheumatoid arthritis that you could look at, and articles to read to illustrate that connection. Ankylosing spondylitis is very similar to rheumatoid arthritis, but it often typically has affected men and younger men particularly. That's something we definitely have evidence, goes back a long time, and evidence of AS has been found in ancient Egypt. It can, at its worst, lead to damage of the joints and the ribs, for example, and the spine. That can even interfere with breathing, and there are cases where it has led to death in that form. There are other types of arthritis of this sort called spondyloarthropathies, and ankylosing spondylitis is technically seen as one of these. An early insight, one that I found, was that ankylosing spondylitis was associated once upon a time with urinary problems, indeed in Victorian times with venereal problems, and it was identified as a venereal disease back in Victorian times, more generally with urinary problems. And coming back to the ideas we've identified before, looking for earlier infections or primary lesions, as we call them, things that might have initiated this, do check out the urinary tract to see if there's any evidence of urinary infections, because they might have been more than just a coincidence. They may have actually led to the ankylosing spondylitis in the first place. A more modern insight has been in realizing that there is an immunological confusion here, the mimicry that we've mentioned in other articles, in that sufferers of ankylosing spondylitis are much more likely to manifest a type of white blood cell antigen called HLA-B27. And this, as it happens, mimics a part of the wall of a particular bacterium called Klebsiella. And so there does seem to be a case here for cross-reaction against Klebsiella, which is often found in the gut, but also in urinary tract infections. So again, it keeps reminding us that these complex conditions can often originate with simple infections, and treating those can be a good approach to dealing with these complex consequences. So again, we come back to the importance of looking at basic defences and barrier defences and so on that we have talked about. And of course, back again, as always, to the health of the gut.